At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger, and you can get started now by saving when you join today. We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need, and you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you. Most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. See Home Club for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for this week's Know Your Foe. Ravens with a big game against the Buffalo Bills coming up on Sunday night, and joining us to talk Bills is Drew Geyer. Drew, how are you doing?
Not too bad, Ken. Not too bad. I thank you for having me back. It's always a good time. Just getting to pick your brain and talk about football with you is always a good time.
One of the real long-lasting reciprocal podcast relationships that we have. We're talking about this in the production meeting, and I always enjoy talking football with you, Drew. But let's jump right into it. Talk a little bit about the Buffalo Bills. A lot of talk this offseason in particular, and last season, I suppose, about the Von Miller contract and the way that it was a little bit of a millstone. I don't think people are having that discussion right now.
No, in fact, that's one of the happy accidents of 2024, we'll call it. In the offseason, a lot was made of the contract restructure that Von Miller accepted. And, you know, some people made commentary about how, oh, he's only doing this because he knows he's going to get cut otherwise. That was never going to happen. We owed him too much money, the dead cap implications, what have you. But instead, it was interesting when you looked at the structure and what came out of the restructure that took place is that a lot of his money got turned into incentives, and it was heavily based on production, tackles for loss, sacks, total tackles. And one of the things you're seeing through the early portion of the season, like when I first saw that, I said to myself, you wouldn't do that unless one, you really were terrified of being cut, which I don't think Von was, or two, if you truly believed that you were healthy enough to go out there and earn that money. And so now through the early going of the season, he's averaging a sack and a fraction a game, and he's made some very timely plays. And I think that's the key there. It's not so much, hey, he's flashing and he's making sacks, because as you know, we've watched defenders who pile up interceptions and sack statistics and quarterback pressures and losing efforts. Instead, he's coming in and getting fourth down sacks to force turnovers on downs and just some really timely pressures that are forcing interceptions on third and long situations. He's doing the job that he was originally brought in here to do before his ACL tear. And you're watching the entire front seven flourish kind of almost in lockstep with him.
All right. Coming into this game, I haven't really checked the Buffalo injury report today. Any new news on it or news about existing injuries, maybe that where players are out for the season or out for extended time?
Well, I know that you guys dodged a bullet here because they haven't. So week one, we had an injury to Teron Johnson, a cornerback that Ravens fans are very familiar with. Yep. And linebacker Terrell Bernard was hurt the following week in the first quarter in our game against Miami. Neither player was placed on IR, which as a fan base gave us hope that, okay, maybe this injury isn't as significant. They're being very cagey. They won't give a lot of details as to what Teron Johnson's injury was. They just said it was a forearm. So I'm assuming a fracture of some kind. But the fact that they didn't put them on IR gives you hope that they truly do believe, and the team doctors believe, he'll be back within a couple of weeks. And so this was kind of going to be the range of when you might get Teron Johnson back. Unfortunately, we're not going to have him. They've already ruled him out. Same thing with Terrell Bernard. They're playing it safe, and I completely understand why. So we're going to be missing our middle linebacker, who was playing at a Pro Bowl level last year, and an all-pro slot corner in Teron Johnson. And I think that specifically to what you guys try to do offensively is going to be, I think that's a boon for you.
Mm-hmm. Terrell Bernard has played some this year. He's not like, he played the first week, the second week. When did he play?
He played week one, and then he got injured in the first quarter of our second week game.
Okay. Appreciate that. In terms of the long run cap situation for the Bills, and we know they're working through now a big second contract. Talk about that a little bit in terms of where they are after the restructure of Miller.
Well, after Von Miller, this year we have no cap. We actually, I believe we have just under $4 million for the rest of the season. So realistically, everything we have only exists because they believe, hey, if we have to bring up practice squad players, God forbid there's more injuries and we have to promote guys on a full-time basis, we have to be able to absorb that. And so there's nothing. There's no money in the kitty for this year. But this year we ate $65 million in dead money. The second most in the last 25, I think it went back like 27. Basically, you had to go back to the day where we released Bruce Smith, Andre Reed, and Thurman Thomas all on the same day to find a time when we ate intentionally ate this much dead money. And they did it because they saw the Stephon Diggs situation kind of playing out. And they said, okay, if we're going to make a move like this, and we think our center's getting older and we might have to make a move here, and we see some things we don't like, and we want to try to maintain a competitive window before Josh hits the age of 30, then you have to make that move and reset your cap. And you know, you can try to massage numbers, but instead Brandon Bean said, we're going to go wholesale, take our medicine in one season, just like he did in 2018 before the Bills became competitive again under Josh Allen. And this time around, it's, our floor of talent was higher than the last time they did this complete salary cap teardown. So the outlook going forward is that after this season, we're going to have a ton of cash to burn. Now they've already dipped into some of it. I know that one of the things you ask about is like players who might re-sign early. Mm-hmm. They didn't get it done before the season, but they did manage to get Spencer Brown under a contract extension. Our right tackle Spencer Brown.
Has he been in the league 3 years already? That seems strange to me.
3 years, and this was going to be his fourth season. And so you don't want to go to free agency or have to flirt with the franchise tag. Mm-hmm. So they get it done early, and he is right now playing like one of the best offensive tackles in the NFL. And so it's smart. You know, all the fans who were deriding him 2 years ago when he was fighting through back injuries are now giving him this massive round of applause. And it's like, yes, this is why we're not all NFL teams. That guy had patience where we would have thrown him to the wolves already, and now we'd be trotting out somebody else who's half the player Spencer Brown is.
All right. Well, the Ravens obviously have a similar big left tackle decisions on the horizon. They let Morgan Moses go, but next year it looks like Ronnie Stanley is playing his last year currently in Baltimore, and they'll either have to figure out a way to re-sign him, which could be very difficult, or they're going to have to move on and find a new one. And that's going to be, it's always a hard nut to swallow to get through the a new tackle or a new left tackle. The Ravens have two in 2 years. Let's talk about Josh Allen a little bit.
Oh boy. You know,
so I know you want to do that. we have a general idea of strengths and weaknesses, and obviously there's probably no more heated Twitter debate than that between Allen and Lamar Jackson in terms of the detractors and the lovers of each of them. It seems to be more about hate than about like of the other players. So much
that's
more.
It. But, yeah. That's it. And I think that you hit the nose on the head. Everybody's so defensive of quote unquote their guy that nobody's willing to acknowledge the positives that the other player brings to the table. And so you do watch this become this acrimonious thing where in reality, they're two very different players, but they're two very special athletes in how they go about doing what they do.
Is there anything new about Allen this year that's changed or improved?
So what we've seen, and you know, there's reasons that people will obviously speculate about, and Josh Allen's a professional. He doesn't talk about it. And in fact, he took the high road this week when he was asked if some commentary he made about the state of our offense was a shot at Stephon Diggs. And he said, look, I love everybody I've ever played with. I don't have any animosity. He's an athlete. I'm an athlete. He's not playing here anymore. I worry about the guys in my building. One of the best things that has happened to Josh Allen is I think having some of these things that he perceived as safety nets stripped away. Gabe Davis, no longer here. He now plays for the Jacksonville Jaguars, who we just played on Monday night. Stephon Diggs, who used to absorb anywhere from 12 to 15 to 16 targets a game, gone, off the roster. And now what you're seeing is almost a freer Josh Allen, because what he's doing is he's playing within the structure of the offense. I think one of the things that people, when they say Josh Allen's a wild card or he's a loose cannon, or you know, when you watch him throwing into triple coverage downfield to a fullback because he thinks he can get away with it, those are instances where Josh, in his heart of hearts, does not believe that the offensive structure can support success, and he tries to play outside of it. And he goes cowboy. And that always yields, like, I would say, painfully mixed results. For the first time in his career as a Buffalo Bill, from one game to the next, we are watching a quarterback who now is playing the system, the way the offensive coordinator's calling it, is how he's running it on the field, with a little ad lib here and there if the pocket breaks down or if he just needs to buy more time with his legs. And the results speak for themselves. You're watching a more functional attack. You're watching him be able to disperse the ball like a point guard in basketball, rather than the guy who says, hey, I'm going to muscle this ball into double coverage because I know I need a big play. And I trust my arm more than I trust. Hey, check it down and let that running back go get yards. Mm-hmm. He's doing those small things now for the first time, which sounds stupid, right? Like a quarterback who doesn't know how to use a check down. But Josh has been that guy. And now you're seeing it come to fruition where a player with the speed of Khalil Shakir last week, he had 72 yards after the catch and he finished the game with 76. But that's it. He just air yards were almost non-existent, but it's because Josh trusted. If there's nothing open downfield, my offensive coordinator has built a hot route for me. He's built a check valve for me here. I've got a running back who will be open in the flat. Use him and let his speed do the heavy lifting. And it's paying dividends. And that's a scary concept when you think about how the offense, even though it was kind of hit or miss last season, even when you let Josh Allen go rogue, you can expect high variance football. When you see this version of him playing within the structure of an offense with a coordinator like Joe Brady, it's incredibly dangerous.
Well, definitely variance accrues to the defense is one of the big things that I always say on my show is defense requires variance. They seek for ways to get it. Offenses like to avoid it and have average plays on a play-by-play basis because you really can't stop three-down football, let alone four-down football if you can do that. Let's move on. Obviously, Allen, for those who don't know, and I assume Ravens fans are fairly familiar, Allen's got a quarterback rating of 133 right now and change. And his 7 touchdowns, no interceptions, right?
9 touchdowns.
9 touchdowns, no interceptions. Okay. and they have played 3 of what I would call the lesser defenses in the National League in Miami, Arizona, and Jacksonville. So this will be a test for them against the Ravens, but still incredibly impressive, even if they were playing 3 high school teams. Well, maybe not, but pretty close. Right. Let's talk about the wide receiver core a little bit. Take me through each of them and what they bring to the table.
They decided in the aftermath of the Gabe Davis and Stephon Diggs experiment, they decided that having 2 players who you believe you have a high floor and a very good ceiling, but only having 2 was not the way to go. And instead, what they've truly done is they've gone around and they've built a wide receiver room of varied skill sets, but it's all based around speed, right? There's a lot of speed. And then what they've done is they've sprinkled in a little bit of size. And those 2 dynamics rule the day within our wide receiver core. So you have Khalil Shakir, who's under, I believe, someone fact check me on this, but I believe he's under 5'10". He may be 5'10 and change. He's a smaller wide receiver, but you wouldn't know it because his contact balance is incredible. His hands are incredible. He just tied the NFL record. If he goes into Sunday Night Football and catches the first pass that's thrown to him, he will have broken the NFL record for the most consecutive targets that were caught by a wide receiver.
Meaning he's caught every pass thrown to him this year.
Every single pass, whether he's, and some of these passes are absurd. He's sliding to the ground. He's reaching behind him with a hand. His grip strength and his contact balance and his ability to frame up and just catch a football are incredible. And then to do it in phase and then gear up quickly with speed makes him incredibly dangerous because there again, the Jacksonville Jaguars found out when they did try to get back out of man coverages and go to play a zone, he could catch the ball in front of them and just run through it. And then when they did try to maintain man coverage on him, he's just too quick. And so then if he gets a crease and he gets a little separation, Allen finds him and he's making reaching out in front of him catches. He's making away catches. He is quietly maybe the most impressive receiver out of this entire core. And then you've got some guys like the rookie Keon Coleman. You never expect much from a rookie, right? And if you're expecting a rookie to kind of carry your wide receiver core, you're already lost. You just don't know it yet. So the bar was pretty low for Coleman, especially knowing his draft profile and how he struggles to get away with from certain coverages and just kind of his route running was going to need polishing. But they found a nice role for him in the fact that when he's a long strider, but when he gets up to speed, he's hard to cover, especially for any cornerback who's not 6 foot or taller. And so just this past week, he catches a really nice play action pass for a touchdown. I think that, Chris, that was like a 40 yarder, I believe, that it just happens because he's so big. Once you're trailing him, you can't get back in front of him. And he's got a wide catch radius. Same thing with Mac Hollins, big guy. They're both very effective in run blocking. And at the same time, they present these big catch radius targets for Josh. And so those two guys can kind of play this intermediate passing game. Khalil Shakir and Curtis Samuel give you the stuff near the line of scrimmage. There really isn't a whole lot of deep passing. But when you look at what these guys are able to give you as a whole in terms of run and catch ability, it's been potent enough to make us the highest scoring offense in football.
All right. By the way, Shakir is 6'1", 190, according to this, but that's amazing that he's caught his first 14 passes.
It's a crazy 6 foot then. Cause I'll tell you what, I've seen pictures of people I know standing next to him. That's a padded 6 foot.
There's a lot of that in the NFL, as you know. There's a lot of people adding pounds, yeah. adding inches. Running backs, they use a fullback at all? Are they strictly an 11 running team? What do they do?
We haven't used, and it's to our own, like I used to get mad because we had LeSean McCoy and we went out and got former Pro Bowler. I'm trying to remember his last name now, but he was a Pro Bowl fullback.
Jerome Felton
from the Vikings. And then we didn't use him. And then we went out and got another Pro Bowl fullback from the Atlanta Falcons and Patrick DeMarco. Didn't use him. Or at least we didn't use him the way you would use a tight end because our running backs aren't the style of running backs that really require it, and our scheme didn't require it. We do not typically use a fullback. Like, I believe if I look here, the percentage of snaps that our fullback plays, he is about down.
Reggie Gilliam has about 16 snaps.
Yeah, he's played 9% of our snaps. They run out of 11. They run a single back mostly is what they run out of. Mm-hmm. And each running back kind of has, I don't want to say a defined role because they all kind of can do some of the same things. But James Cook is your speed. He's your speed. And he's, if you're looking for like early downs, he can come up with these ridiculous chunk plays where, like I said, Josh Allen goes, hey, there's no one open in the intermediate routes. I'll dump it down to him and maybe get a yard or two. And you watch James Cook turn the corner too quickly for linebackers to catch the angle. And he turns what should be a 6 yard gain into 17 yards. And he's just up the sideline until your safety can push him out. He's learned a lot about how to take the right angles as a runner. And that's made him incredibly dangerous so far this season. Ray Davis as a rookie is very interesting because he has been, for a rookie, you wouldn't expect somebody to come in with really solid pass protection chops, but he has them. And at the same time, he's the only running back in our stable who I trust to run with any kind of toughness really between the tackles. And yet he's been able to do it in 3 straight games now, where whenever he gets snaps in the middle of the field, he hits yards after contact and it's kind of grinded out football. And at the same time, his hands are really good. And so in that way, they trust him as a third down back. And so between James Cook and Ray Davis, you have a running back two combination that you trust to get a lot of your rushing yards. You know, James Cook, they're going to run a little bit more zone. They're going to run a little bit more zone blocking. When Davis is on the field, you're going to see a little bit more gap style running. But then there's Ty Johnson, and it's incredible the things that they're doing with him because they don't treat him like a running back. They treat him like, I almost want to say like a Curtis Samuel type, like a wide receiver slash running back. And I say this because there's a play back in our game against the Miami Dolphins where the Dolphins call what seems like it's the perfect play call defensively if we hadn't split Ty Johnson out wide. So Ty Johnson leaves the line of scrimmage, and typically, I mean, Ken, you've been doing film study for a long time. How often when you see a wide receiver downfield by more than 18, 20 yards or a running back, 18, 20 yards downfield, typically that's just them trying to clear space and get a guy out of the box, or at least they're probably drifting a little bit, right?
Are you talking in terms of what they do as a blocker?
What they do as a pass catcher. So if I have a running back split out to the right, and that guy goes 18 yards downfield, more often than not, he's not even involved in the play. He's like a fourth read.
Today's NFL, I would say the only routes that go that far for running back are really wheel routes. And we see so much chip blocking in Baltimore here that you don't even get very many of those. You get outlet routes of some sort.
Exactly. So when they split Ty Johnson out wide, nobody has any reason to believe that they're going to actually use him as a credible downfield threat. And that's how he's able to get himself in front of Jalen Ramsey's face and then run what's essentially a post route. And if Ramsey doesn't tackle him at the 2 yard line, it's a touchdown, and he gets credit for getting beaten coverage by a running back. And it's just a product of scheme. It has nothing to do with anything he did or didn't do well. It's just they put enough eye candy in front of him from a wide receiver standpoint that he got lulled into believing there's no way they're actually going to call a deep shot to a running back. Mm-hmm. And so in that way, Joe Brady's brought so much variance to how he uses those three running backs interchangeably that it augments what we lack at wide receiver. And now all of a sudden it's made this offense very dangerous. It's given it teeth. We're going into the season, one of the big knocks on our team was that we didn't have the offensive talent to compete.
All right. So we've been through that. Let's talk about the tight ends. There's been some question about the tight ends so far this year.
So Dawson Knox is, I used to have a joke that it would be like Transformers. Like, you know, they change into things. Some of them change into Corvettes. Some of them turns into semi trucks. Dawson Knox, his hands just turn into Teflon pans and everything just slips and rattles off of them. His catch issues remain, and I think you see less of a usage of him in terms of what they want to do with their offensive production. He's really not he has yet to be any sort of focal point of our attack. And I mean, I think if I look here, what does he have? How many
targets?
Four. Yeah, he has four. So he's clearly not seeing the kind of attention that Dalton Kincaid is. Dalton Kincaid is 11 targets through three games. And in the first game, they went away from Dalton King, or the second game against the Miami Dolphins, they went away from Dalton Kincaid completely. But one of the things we're witnessing is that, and maybe this will change, and maybe it's this week against the Ravens. Dalton Kincaid is he's an elite talent at the tight end position. I think he's kind of shown that in flashes here and there. A lot of people know this, and they look at the watered down talent pool that we have at wide receiver, or at least on paper, the talent level at wide receiver and running back, and said, well, defensive coordinators say we're going to gravitate everything, like not everything, but a lot of our resources towards trying to not let Dalton Kincaid be the thing that succeeds on this offense. He's probably the most natural pass catcher. He's a good mismatch in the seam, especially when it comes to safeties and linebackers. And he's developed a better feel between his rookie season and now for kind of how to feel out of zone. And so in that way, he's very dangerous. And so in the Miami game, if we could look back at some of the tape and some of the still shots, and you can see that at any time, there's three to four defenders who all just get pulled by Dalton Kincaid one place or the other, because when Allen looks at him, the defenders react to that. And they've been baited into making a lot of bad calls, or at least not bad calls, but you took the most obvious option to hurt you, but that left Josh to go find Mac Hollins, who you didn't know would be successful in this offense, to go find a Khalil Shakir, whose name most of those defenders probably didn't even know until it was game day. So it's this kind of thing where our tight end room has a lot of potential, but right now it's absorbing so much attention from other teams that they haven't been able to showcase a lot of it. I know this past week against the Jaguars, Kincaid got his first touchdown of the season, and a couple of the catches, they tried to play man defense against him, and he was just absolutely torching everybody they would put on him. So then they had no choice but to double him, and that's when things opened up for the rest of our wide receivers. Mm-hmm. So with the Ravens, I'm going to be very interested to see how you guys approach this puzzle of what to do with the Dalton Kincaid problem.
It's definitely a back to front build. Sorry, Yeah, back to front, built defense. A lot of their talent is in the secondary, even though so far they face good quarterbacks. Good quarterbacks have had some ability to pick it apart to date. So we'll be interested to see how this plays out on Sunday night. Let's go back to the offensive line now for a minute. Take us through left to right in terms of who's standing there and who's playing well.
So Deion Dawkins and Chris, fact check me on this if I'm wrong. Deion Dawkins, by ESPN's pass block win rate metric, I believe they're both in the top 12 for tackles. So Spencer Brown and Deion Dawkins at the tackle positions are playing some of the best football of either of their careers. And it's incredible to see what this offense can be with a talent like Josh when he gets bookend tackle play. There's very little pressure coming from anybody off the edge. And that's given Allen so much time to operate and orchestrate the offense that, well, you see the point totals. They speak for themselves, I think. The interior of the offensive line was always going to be the question mark coming into the season. Now, our center is new. Connor McGovern was our left guard last year. We kicked him inside to center. I was concerned, but he's acclimated really well. He really has done a nice job for himself, both analytically, if you look at some of the finer statistics on pass protection and run blocking, but also just in terms of his comfort with Josh. In, you know, when you see a new center, there can sometimes be issues with the exchange, issues with snaps. In fact, I'm pretty sure watching some of the Ravens.
I'll just say with McGovern, and I appreciate you giving me a break here, he's got a terrible pass blocking score from PFF. I was kind of hoping you would shed some light on that, yes. What it might be.
Okay, so here's the thing with this. When you look at who we've played and you look at the way that they've decided to play, I always, the PFF scores are, I always try to remind myself, you can be a fan of something, and then when you see something you don't like, you can't push back against it because like, oh, well, I like these stats for these players, but then I don't like them for this one. Or, oh, I like it when it tells me something I want to hear and something I don't.
That's the big one.
I get news that I don't want to hear. So when you look at where the pressure has come from this season, Osiris Torrence and Connor McGovern are tied for the team lead in pressures allowed with 5. Neither one of them has a lot of sack, but the problem is all of the pressure that they've allowed directly leads to a hurry or some sort of harassment of our quarterback. Now, they don't turn into sacks because our quarterback is incredibly hard to bring down in the pocket. His mobility is one of those things that makes him special in that regard. But I think the problem is that Connor McGovern is trying to get used to the concept of, hey, I can snap the ball to my quarterback and I can block the man in front of me. I also have a sophomore player to my right who's going through some of his own growing pains. And I think that that's the hill, like having watched it with my own two eyes, McGovern dies sometimes on the hill of, I'm trying to help this guy and you don't get the, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I have a job to do, but also I'm going to try to pass my man off because that's what this requires. But also I don't know if I can trust him to pick it up. And I'm not trying to blame Torrence for this. He's a second year player. He played very well in his rookie year, but growth isn't linear. That's a thing, you know, okay. And I think we're watching Torrence struggle. And as a byproduct in pass protection specifically, I think that serves the center right guard combination really poorly. I think that, and because if you look at the other side, David Edwards is fine. He, you know, again, a little bit of pressure, but nothing significant, nothing to worry about. Edwards is also a multi-year veteran who has a Super Bowl ring from the year that he played with the St. Louis Rams. Look at me. I'm aging myself here. When he played with the Rams. And so in that way, Torrence really is the weak link of the offensive line. And even though the metrics, like here, we're looking at PFF, I know what I see when I'm in the stands. I know what I see when I rewatch the games. And what it is it's almost like there's a concerted effort saying, hey, Spencer Brown's going to go watch. He's going to go, especially he has to get into his kick slide. He has to go take these guys who are trying to bend the corner. He'll go do that. That kind of leaves Torrence on his own, and Torrence left on his own hasn't been good in pass protection. And so I almost feel like that's, if there's a weakness of this line, it's McGovern and Torrence when it favors that side of the line. Now, where does Matabike play?
Matabike plays everywhere pretty much at this point, but he plays on the edge some. They line him up on the edge. He's a little bit like Jones of Kansas.
I was going to say, is it a Chris Jones? Because I'm not
a lot of three. He'll line up on either side. And the Ravens, honestly, the Ravens interior pass rushers are the real strength of the defense. So that's.
Because I'm not looking forward to that when it comes to that specific spot of our offensive line. Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay. Well, appreciate the update on the offensive line. Spencer Brown is a player I was really interested in because he was, I thought, going to be a lower cost opportunity to come up with a second tier left tackle. And he ended up going higher than I thought. But still at a level where he, but he's the Northern Iowa guy, right?
Yep. Northern Iowa set the school record for bench press. I believe it was over 500 pounds.
Okay.
And he set the record after he tied it. He tied it. Everyone's going nuts. Hey! And then he was like, you know what? I think I got one more rep in me. And everyone's like, you're crazy. That's who he is. He's a wild man.
How many reps did he do on the bench? Do you remember?
On the bench at the combine?
Yeah.
Let me see.
Because one of the things about him, I mean, he's very long armed, and oftentimes guys who have a lot of bench reps will tend to be the shorter armed guys. Oftentimes defensive tackles, some offensive linemen with shorter arms, and it's much easier to bench a high number of reps when you have shorter arms. But I'm guessing he might not look that great on the bench in terms of reps, just because of the long arm component.
29 reps.
That's fantastic for that length. Fantastic.
He's a free and just to see. And the thing about Spencer Brown, that's I really think special. And that's why the Bills had to prioritize. Hey, we need to clear up all this cap space so we can retain him. You will consistently.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code Ravens. So head to mood.com/Ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code Ravens when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
We see him at that size. He's, you know, 6'7", 6'6". He pushes 311, 312 pounds, somewhere in there. And you will consistently see him blocking at the second level. He's out there pushing around linebackers and safeties regularly because he's very athletic for that size. And so, you know, some of the concerns that come along with that, right? When you see a guy that size who has back injuries, you go,
yeah.
But so far this season, he's been perfectly fine. And throughout these first three games, he's been a mainstay just living in at the linebacker level of the other team when they decide to run the football. And it's been they've used him as a puller. They've done they've been able to do from a schematic standpoint, some own unorthodox things because of the athleticism that Spencer Brown has.
He's a pull typically as part of a counter, then a center tackle or guard tackle pull.
Yeah.
Going left. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about the Ravens' weakness at inside linebacker. They've had the coverage weakness on the team has basically been there in between level two and three in the middle of the field. They haven't been perfect on the outside, but generally speaking, the cornerback play has been pretty damn good. And in particular, now that they've got Ardarius Washington in the slot, I think they look very good there. But how would you expect that Allen will try and pick apart a team where the weakness is at inside linebacker?
With the weakness being an inside linebacker, I think one of the things, so we were just talking about Spencer Brown doing a lot of pulling. I think one of the things that you're going to see is, you know, we also mentioned that we run primarily at a single back. One of the things that you see them augment that with when they do need a lead blocker is they'll pull the tackle in Spencer Brown and bring him up through that gap in the A or B and help pave a way for James Cook, who is quick enough to get the snap from a deeper position, gear up, and kind of ride Spencer Brown's coattails right up a crease into the middle of the defense.
Okay, I'm sorry, I miscommunicated here. I'm not talking about the run, because the Ravens stopped the run exceptionally well. Their problem is with pass defense, and Mahomes, Minshew, frankly, and even Prescott picking on the inside linebackers and the area between L2 and L3, where there's been a lot of weakness in coverage.
Well, one of the things that we did against the Jaguars, knowing that the interior of the defensive line was fairly stout with Eric Armstead and some of the acquisitions they've had there, we just abused them in the what we would do is we would call up some deeper routes, intermediary routes on the outside in order to clear those cornerbacks, or at least even if they, you know, depending on whether it was man or whether it was zone, we knew we could carry the cornerback off the line of scrimmage. And then they're just basically attacking the flats. And then it just depends on the foot speed of your linebackers. How quickly are they going to identify off play action that he's going to Shakir in the flat? Because if you can't identify that and you can't trigger quickly enough and take the right angle, it ends up being on shallow drag routes. You know, one of Shakir's biggest plays of the night was just a shallow drag right across the linebacker's face. The linebacker tried to keep pace and couldn't. And Shakir's open with a kind of just really easy over the shoulder catch, and he's off to the races.
Was that run off some sort of bunch formation and a pick or rub out within that created space? Or
I believe that was sort of like a three wide, one out, and then Shakir in the slot, and he just came across the formation, and his speed is just such that he knows. And that's what I love about Shakir is he understands where he is on the field. He knows you can't grab him because he hasn't left the line of scrimmage far enough. He could draw a flag for defensive holding or illegal contact. But then when he turns the corner, it's so sudden that there's a lot of linebackers who get caught a little flat-footed and they can't keep up with that. So I expect a series of drag route plays. I also expect to see more of a Curtis Samuel than we have in weeks past. This is how little he's been involved in the offense. I forgot to talk about him when we mentioned the wide receivers. He got money this offseason that made you think he's our wide receiver 3. And yet he's been almost a non-factor. Now, some of that's a toe injury, so I think they're kind of slow playing his involvement. But at the same time, in the Dolphins game, we watched them line up. It started with orbit motion. He comes around, and then he runs a wheel route. And it gets him on a linebacker, and that's a mismatch because it's speed. And if he was 3 inches taller, he probably catches it over the linebacker's head. Unfortunately, he's short. The ball ends up hitting the linebacker in the back of the helmet, and it's not a touchdown. But it's that type of thing where I think you're going to see wheel routes. I think you're going to see shallow drags. And then I think it depends on how you guys choose to cover Dalton Kincaid. Because they seem to have a really good understanding that teams want to neutralize him. And so in that way, they almost use him as a decoy saying, hey, if you want him, go get him. Because we'll operate over here with a bunch of other players.
They've introduced with McDonald more than we've seen so far with Orr, although they did a little bit of this in week 3. They've done more robber concepts, more of that strong safety coming down to take away one specific receiver. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to show them the same thing every time. You play matchup zone on different sides and play it differently. But the Ravens generally start with a too high shell. That's what they show the opposing quarterback. And quarterbacks without great arm strength are loath to throw deep against that kind of an alignment. But Allen certainly has the arm strength to do it and the moxie to try it. So we'll see.
And this is what scares me, Ken, because I think right now we're seeing Josh Allen do as well as he has and put up the numbers and the offense have the production because he's kind of put that moxie on the shelf for a minute. And he says, look, I'll live within the scheme and I'll let this do the heavy lifting because that's what everyone's telling me is going to be successful. But to your earlier point, we have yet to play a team that could really punch back. And we have yet to play a team whose defense really has some teeth and some chops. And I know the Ravens are kind of our first litmus test of, okay, you're running into a real football team now. And I mean that with all the disrespect in the world to the Miami Dolphins.
Yep.
We're running into
well deserved.
And so I'm very interested to see if Allen can maintain, because it's all well and good to give him his flowers now when you say, hey, look, he's finally learned. He's learned. Has he? Because what happens when this game gets into the second quarter and it's a 10-3 game and we're trailing? Is he going to channel those mistakes of the past and decide that he's going to become a gunslinger again and start to operate outside the structure of the offense? Because once he does that, high variance play. Just, he's going to give you some amazing runs. He's going to throw into double coverage when he shouldn't and make an amazing catch. And he'll also throw an interception that makes me flip my coffee table and take a walk.
I can actually see that. It's not difficult to see. All right. We got to herd this back in here and go over the defense here, because we're way over time here. But I always like to start with this. When the Buffalo Bills get to third down, what is their favored pass defense package and look?
So in the past, we always went nickel. Nickel is our base. That is our base defense we operate out of. You can tell if you just look at the snap counts. We have even with Teron Johnson out, his replacement, Cam Lewis, has played 89% of our snaps. This year, they've introduced a dime look for the first time in a very long time. And at first, I didn't understand it, because I go, this kid, Jamarcus Ingram, he was on the practice squad last year. He's a University of Buffalo product. I don't know if you know this, but there's not a whole lot of them in the NFL. And somehow, three of them are on the Buffalo Bills. So it's easy to look at that and scoff. And then Jamarcus Ingram starts making plays, and he's getting PBUs, and he's getting interceptions, and obviously the pick six that got him Defensive Player of the Week against the Miami Dolphins. Jamarcus Ingram has been a very interesting addition to the team. I think last year they learned they could trust him when they had to bench Kyrie Elam and the Jacksonville game, and they put him out there, and he held his own with Kelvin Ridley for at least 15, 20 reps. And so from that, they went into this season saying, hey, we could do a dime look, an actual dime. And that gives us so many more options in obvious passing situations. And in those moments, they've been very, very good. They've been very effective. And it's always a zone, right? There's not a lot of man defense being played here by this team. But all of them are just so assignment sound, and they seem to, I think it's the more, it's not so much their individual talents. It's like that phalanx idea. They communicate so well. They know where the other guy is going to be. They know how to hand off. Hey, this guy's coming through your zone. He just naturally and instinctively knows where his man's going to be, and he breaks underneath to go take away whatever the dump off is. It's incredible to watch them operate. And so the dime look, I think, is going to be something, especially with the pass catchers you have at tight end. It's going to be interesting to see if they trust that lack of size, but the communication in that group to kind of win the day against you guys.
And Jamarcus really built like a corner. He lists a corner at 6'2", 190. He'd be an aircraft carrier outside corner. He wouldn't be a guy you'd figure for the slot at all.
Nope.
But this is an old football axiom of mine, is that your third best coverage safety, in his case, is, you know, they're picking a corner to do it, is always a better coverage guy than your second best inside linebacker. Yep. And you really get a lot of value out of that on third down. When the Bills introduced this dime look, obviously they're playing the Jacksonville Jaguars, and they're basically treating them like a sock puppet in terms of the game. Were they able to go through that in the entire second half, pretty much in dime with that kind of lead?
Well, what's funny is they stayed nickel for a lot of the second half. But that just speaks to how sad things are in Jacksonville. I think with a more robust team, I think you would see them mixing that up more, especially when you're dealing with a team that has certain size advantages and speed advantages at certain positions. And that's what the dime look makes me think of your team, right? Mm-hmm. When you need that 6'2" guy who can go in there and maybe hold his own in coverage a little bit better with an Isaiah Likely than a Dorian Williams would. I don't know that I trust Dorian Williams yet in coverage. He hasn't been a liability to this point, but I don't think anyone's actually tried to go after him. And I also don't think any of the teams we've played so far had any real tight end talent to speak of. You know, Evan Ingram missed the Jaguars game. That was, I think it was a huge blow to Jacksonville.
I think that was probably worth 37 points right there. I can't imagine that it would have been an overtime game without him on the field.
So it's just one of those ideas of, I think that in terms of how often you're going to see dime, I think it could be quite a bit, specifically in those passing downs, you know, third and long. And if you guys go out there with a two tight end set, I absolutely expect to see Jamarcus Ingram taking snaps because realistically we're playing two backup inside linebackers, not just one, two, with the loss of Matt Milano.
Well, that's certainly not, because Milano is a guy on the weak side. When he's playing there, you don't take off the field on third down. He's too good as a coverage guy. He breaks the rule that I just talked about a minute ago.
Yep.
But the Ravens have just gone to a dime look, and I think after the success they had with it against Dallas, I think they're going to stay with it. Now, some people would say, what success? They came back in the second half. That was really, really special teams that betrayed them in the in the second half more than the defense. So we'll talk about that when we flip this around. Let's move to the defensive line. I want to talk a little bit about rotation depth and snap management there. How's that group looking so far this year?
It's been so Sean McDermott loves to platoon his guys. There isn't anybody that he wants playing full time or even playing more than 60% of the snaps. And one of the nice things has been, though, especially the last few games, you know, in that Cardinals game, I think things got away from him. And then it was tight down the stretch. And so they trusted their starters. They played a little bit more than they would have otherwise. But by and large, when you try to look at just the snap counts across the board, but also how they're platooning, Von Miller is actually playing. I believe now he's up to 40, but before he was around 35%. And that's right about where you want Von Miller. At this point in his career, you don't want him on the field for 50, 60% of the snaps.
Right.
And when you look at the leaders in that, it's linebackers and safeties and cornerbacks. Greg Rousseau leads everybody at 67, but Greg Rousseau is a young guy with a lot of gas. He's got a lot of gas in the tank, and he plays a style of defensive end that I don't think wears you out as much as it may be. You know, he's not just running. It's not just cardio where, hey, I'm trying to bend the corner all the time. The archetype for Bills defensive ends is we crush a pocket. We don't try to run around it. And so in that way, they want big, powerful pass rushers on the outside who can push things inside. That's why AJ Epenesa was drafted, because he fit that mold and they thought they could wean him down, kind of lean him out, and then make him a 4-3 D end, because he had draft comps to Cam Hayward. So the fact that they made him a 4-3 D end is wild. But in that way, we've now been able to rotate AJ Epenesa, you know, Greg Rousseau, those guys go out there and they take the brunt of the snaps. And then you mix in Von Miller in obvious passing situations, and you bring in other guys like Casey Toohill. And you know, now Javon Solomon is healthy, our fifth round rookie pick this year, who shockingly he led I believe it's FCS in sacks his senior year. So far, it's not his pass rush that's impressed me. It's his ability to run defend, and that's why he's on the 53-man roster. 4-3 defensive end, you have to be able to stop the run and set an edge. Every single defensive end we have rotates and can at least do that. You know, if they can't pass rush, everybody is a stout run defender. And that is why, like, that's one of the matchups of this game to me is, how does this defensive line hold up against this just juggernaut rushing attack that you guys have built? And DaQuan Jones in the middle obviously helps. He's been doing very well, both in terms of just being stout at the point of attack with his size and everything else. He eats a lot of blockers. Also paving the way for Ed Oliver to kind of be a little bit more disruptive behind the line of scrimmage. Ed Oliver's a three tech. He's going to show you some pass rush. In this phase of his career, he's been showing that he can get behind the line of scrimmage and redirect running backs in the backfield more often than he was previously in his career. And I think a lot of that has to do with not only his own development, but playing next to a guy like DaQuan Jones, who might not be the most sudden athlete, but he's a mammoth human being with a lot of power. He has a little pass rush acumen of his own. And so that he's almost always double teamed, I would say, DaQuan Jones. If they don't, it usually ends up in either a quarterback pressure or some sort of diversion of the running back in the backfield. So a lot of teams will focus their interior resources on him, which frees up Ed Oliver to make some plays. Beyond them, though, there's nobody disruptive on the Bills roster. Everybody who's there, you know, Dwayne Carter's a rookie. We drafted him in the third round out of Duke. He's had moments, but not really. I mean, he's learning, right? As a third round pick at defensive tackle, it's a giant step up to be going against other team centers and interior guards, especially decent ones. So I think that the interior defensive line, like, that's a concern for me heading into this matchup. But I think by and large, in terms of how they platoon, you're going to constantly see a churn of bodies at those positions.
Okay. And a lot of the Ravens run game is based on misdirection, not just in terms of power. They have that. They have some good size they can use when they get Ricard on the field. If they want to play point of attack football, they're capable. But a lot of it is based on misdirection. You know, a jet motion, a handoff that's you know, a move to the mesh point, let's call it, between Lamar Jackson and Henry, and then the option to pull it or let him roll. And that's been pretty successful so far. And size is important, but also not getting your linebackers out of position is very important. Do you trust the linebackers to stay in position in their gaps appropriately against the run?
Do I trust? That's a tough one. Nobody's done it to us yet, but do I trust them? They're backups. Their NFL experience is not, you know, Baylen Spector was our starter this week. He is a career special teams player. Dorian Williams is a second year player. He was a third round pick. He's doing very well. He seems to understand a little bit about gap integrity. He understands where to be. He understands how to choose the right lane. He also over pursues sometimes. He might take a bad angle here and there. Now, again, nobody's been talented enough to make us pay for it yet. And this is where I keep calling this game a litmus test. It really is. It's to let us know how much of what we've seen so far was in fact just a byproduct of who we played versus the actual talent and execution of our own football team. I think that misdirection for guys who have so little experience, I think that's that would be a boon to your offense. You should do more of it. The jet motion, all of the stuff like that. There's no way that these guys have seen that. I know because I watched it and the Jaguars certainly didn't run any of it. So Baylen Spector is a starting inside linebacker, knows nothing about eye discipline when it comes to that kind of thing. And so in that way, yeah, I'm very concerned about how they go about handling that aspect of your rushing attack.
All right. I guess you've told us a little bit off ball. Take us quickly through the secondary in terms of those players and what they provide.
Our safeties are actually playing really well in terms of box support. Deep, we haven't really played any teams that have tried. You know, I think the Miami Dolphins probably would have liked to, but their offense never got off the ground because their offensive line couldn't hold up under our pass rush. And for having all the speed with Waddle and Hill that they have, our cornerbacks are very good. Our outside cornerbacks, in fact, Christian Benford right now is the second rated cornerback in the entire NFL. We're going to talk about this on our recap show for the Jaguars game later tonight when we record it. He's like Trey White, except a bully. He has all the zone coverage chops that Trey White brought to the table. And I know that's saying a lot. People go, oh, it's hard. It's one thing to say it. He's doing it. The metrics support it. The eye test shows it. But the difference is where Trey White approached the game of football. Now he had a slighter frame. He played a little less physical style of football to begin with. Christian Benford is a little bit bigger and he plays the game much more physically. And so whereas in the past, we were kind of content with playing a lot of softer off, you know, kind of zone coverages. Benford is in there roughing up receivers and mixing it up after the whistle. And there's a lot of helmet butting. And because of the way he plays both them and the football when it's in the air, and it's incredible to watch, and it's also very frustrating for opposing offenses because they are forced to kind of funnel their passing game more into the middle. And once that happens, that's where our safeties really do kind of acquit themselves well. They're really good at keeping quick passes in front of them, rallying to tackle. No one has been able to test us deep. Now, depending on how robust your ability to call up and scheme deep shots down the field is, it could be very interesting to see what a competent offense and a real, you know, a really upper echelon quarterback can do to our secondary. But so far, no one has been able to get over on us in that regard.
All right. So Taylor Rapp is back there. A lot of people may remember that name from the Rams. It was a fine player for them. The Bills got him very cheap, in my opinion. What about 4 years, 16 million, 4 years, 15 million, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was a very cheap deal. I want to say it was like 3 million a year. Yeah. And I have to crack a fresh beer when we talk.
You go to it. You go to it.
It makes me incredibly angry. One of my friends who's in the military he used the term he uses to describe Taylor Rapp is fire close. And what that means is, hey, when you're firing off mortar rounds, you're supposed to check and say, hey, is it fire here? Is it fire friendly fire? What it would say? Fire close means everything around you is like a drop zone for him. And the problem is that he is a danger to even our own team. Like, you think about it, he's now caused two injuries this season. Everybody loves the idea of this physical safety who comes downhill and throws his body around and hits people. Well, he's the reason we don't have Taron Johnson for this football game. Him, because he overpursued a play he shouldn't have been involved in to begin with, and then led with his helmet, diving into our own player. He did it again the following week. And luckily, the recipient, I can't remember what linebacker that was, but he wasn't injured. The guy plays with a physical brand of football. I don't know what his coverage acumen is because he hasn't been tested much, but he's reckless. And that's a problem, because not only will that draw flags, that will also injure your teammates. It'll also drag you out of position, and against an offensive coordinator who understands those tendencies about you, can get you exposed. If they know that you're trigger happy when you come downhill and try to, oh my God, they're going to, it's you, but you're more active to bite on play action. You're more, it's just, he's a problem. And I can't wait for Cole Bishop to earn more reps with this defense, because when they re-signed Taylor Rapp, I wasn't miserable because I had a feeling we were going to lose both safeties anyway, Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer. But Cole Bishop is a much more, I think once he gets acclimated to the NFL speed, a much more all-around polished product. Whereas Taylor Rapp, you're just, it's like whether it's a screw or a nail, you have a hammer in your hand, and that's how you're going to fix the problem.
Okay, very good. Well, Hyde and Poyer played together for a very long time in Buffalo. I don't actually know how long it was, but they're both good for a long time, that's for sure.
2017 until this season, so seven seasons?
That's an eternity,
yeah,
to play together for two defenders. All right, well, outstanding. Now, let's flip this around in terms of who the Ravens present to the Bills. How do you expect them to defend, to try and defend Jackson, Flowers, Andrews, likely in the Ravens run game? I mean, just some conceptual things that they may try and do.
Conceptually, what I would hope they would do is run as much nickel and dime as possible. Don't get sucked into the, and this is where I hate saying this. I'm on a Ravens podcast. It doesn't matter. Patrick Ricard is one of my favorite players in the entire NFL. I love some Patrick Ricard. Like, it gets me up in the morning. Like, that's like a, it's like a fresh cup of coffee watching him just be the size that he is and have the foot speed and the way he just, it's throwback football. I love it. And I wonder how that matches up with what we bring to the table this week, because our linebackers are smaller. You know, we've kind of gone in the way of the NFL, smaller coverage oriented linebackers. And you guys have this fullback lurking around out there who, if he gets on the edge and it's up to Dorian Williams to go get him, I hate to say this, but he's a road cone and that guy's an 18 wheeler. It's going to be a problem. And I expect them to try to match up with your tight ends, because I think they believe that if they can stop you from passing, you can get all the rushing yards you want. You're not going to win with rushing. And there might be some credence to that. I mean, you look at the way the Cowboys game went. You guys ran them off the floor. In terms of rushing, you ran them out of the gym. Mm-hmm. But then the lack of execution down the stretch in the passing game, all it would have taken was a handful of catches in that second half to close the game out. And it kept leaving the door open for the Cowboys. I think they believe if they can suppress that, make you guys one-dimensional, at least make it the less explosive dimension. If they're going to run, make them run six times, seven times, eight times to get down the field and score versus four quick passing plays and it's in the end zone. And so with that said, I still expect to see a lot of dime and nickel. And I think they're going to force your tight ends to earn everything they get from him. Flowers, I think, is going to have his hands full just with his size when it comes to Benford and Rasul Douglas. They're bullies. They're rough zone corners, probably the most fit. Like, you would think they're playing man, but they're not. It was a zone call. And you guys are going to have to, I think if there's a weak spot for you to attack, it's probably Cam Lewis, right? Cam Lewis trying to fill in at the nickel corner position. But again, I don't know what your talent to do that is, because I haven't seen a whole lot of work from the rest of the depth chart at wide receiver outside of Zay Flowers.
And no, nobody's, they threw the ball 15 times against the Cowboys. So exactly. that's part of the issue. All right. Let's I don't ask for score predictions ever, but how about picking one player on each side of the ball that you think matches up extremely well with the Ravens?
I think a player who matches up really well with you guys is Khalil Shakir. And the reason I say that is because on the outside of your defense, you're right. Your cornerbacks, it's a Ravens football team, and it has been, and as it will be forever, you guys will have big, long, good cornerback play on the boundary, smart cornerback play on the boundary. They use the sideline to their advantage. They're very physical. It's that inside game against Khalil Shakir that I really question. You know, if the Bills can find ways to scheme him onto your linebackers and safeties, it's going to be that's a place I think the Bills can find victories for themselves. And then Dalton Kincaid is going to have a presence, even if, and this is one of those games where I look at Joe Brady and I say, Joe, how good are you? Because you're going to have to be really good. We're going to have to score a lot of points, and that's going to mean involving one of our best offensive talents, even if they try to take him away. So now Joe Brady has to go earn his paycheck by figuring out, even if it's okay by on his own natural talent and the fact that they're double covering him, we can't get Kincaid open. Okay, then you have to get Josh really comfortable to throwing to him when he's covered, because we need him in this game. Like, that's going to be the thing that opens up the running game for us. That's going to be the thing that opens up all the things, other things we want to do on offense. And I think it starts in between the hashes, and it's going to be Khalil Shakir, and it's going to be Dalton Kincaid.
All right. All right. Fair enough. On the defense, did you have a defensive player who matches up well?
I think Greg Rousseau, just because he's, you know, Von Miller's going to get a lot of the eyeballs. Greg Rousseau plays that position with a lot of power. And again, he just holds an edge. But he presses it, and then when they twists, you know, that's a new thing that Bobby Babich, as our defensive coordinator, has rolled out. When you watch them on twists, he's always the guy who's driving it inside so that, you know, it, like in a NASCAR package almost, AJ Epenesa can loop around his back. And in that way, Greg Rousseau's so big, and he's so long, and he just gets in the face of your tackle and guard, that if he's doing that consistently, as we call those twists, it's going to be like Lamar Jackson's going to have to be on his horse, which he will. But again, we're disrupting the play. And now it's how much variance can you create? Can we, when you guys do decide to throw the ball, can we call up the right play to try to throw him off his mark, even for a few seconds, make him contemplate running?
Okay.
I think so Greg Rousseau is the key to that.
Shakir and Rousseau are your two guys. Drew, always a pleasure talking football with you. We've gone way too long, obviously, on this show, but
it's always my fault.
Well, it doesn't matter. We're not trying to assign blame here, but where can folks find your work on Twitter, your podcast, and talk football with you online if they'd like to?
We're on Twitter at Rockpile Report, and then you can find our podcast anywhere you download them, Google, Stitcher, Google Play, Stitcher. I believe we're on iHeartRadio. We're on Spotify. We're on all the major streaming platforms. So go check it out if you're bored and you want to hear the angst of, you want to hear barroom conversation about the woes of a Buffalo Bills fan.
Always find something to complain about. That's what we got to love about it. Other folks out there, really appreciate you listening again. If you have interest in doing a film study short, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. Drew, thanks again for coming on.
Appreciate it.
We'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab, also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tab. Trade in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.